It's 7:34, 18 minutes, 17:59 on the first half, and I managed to shut off the recorder, so I'll merge these files together when I get them home. Or not. I will just say good morning. Today is September 24th, 2014, and that's the only thing that you missed from the first file, so save me some time. So yeah, yesterday I got up nauseated, headache, stuffy, feeling like crap. This morning I got up feeling the same way, but I need to walk. Walking is a gift I give myself, because I always feel better after I walk, and sitting around feeling nauseated isn't helping. That doesn't make any difference if I'm walking or not. I still feel like crap. Good morning. A couple cute little dogs. This morning is, I'm back on the wired headset, giving it a go. Turn off the Bluetooth. And in theory, I'm using the old voice recorder app. It looks a little bit different, but it has the features I was using before, which include being able to set the file prefix. So I'm able to set up talking on my morning walk -2014-09-, and all I have to do is put the date in it. And I'm good to go. So we'll see how this works. I'm pretty sure I've got it set up correctly. It looks like it's recording. It's giving me the little flashy. It's hard to say because the microphone on the handset is so sensitive. It's easy to, when I'm looking at the face of the phone, it's easy for the handset to pick up my voice's profile, so that it's sometimes difficult to tell whether I'm recording through the headset or through the handset. So we'll see. Anyway, the big conversation yesterday had to do with word of mouth. And apparently sometime around the first of the month, somebody was arguing that word of mouth is an urban myth. That it doesn't really exist for books. That it has to be a medium that is easily consumed, quickly consumed, easily shared, and books aren't any of those things. And the stipulation is that they're talking about literally word of mouth, real mouths, real ears, that social media doesn't count as word of mouth. Which, as a concept, yeah, it's sort of like, so he's arguing that the water cooler is no longer a valid meeting point in terms of exchange of information, in terms of sharing among human beings. And I have to agree with it. But the lunacy of it, the inanity of it is staggering. It's yeah, the water cooler died 10 years ago. We haven't had a significant amount of water cooler buzz, literal water cooler buzz, for years. Maybe as long as a decade. So arguing that word of mouth is dead because there is no water cooler is sort of like arguing that nobody reads anymore because the e-books, because they're not reading real books, they're reading electronic books. It's dumb. It's just dumb. And it got brought to my attention because one of the guys at the writers' discussion group is posting his support of this notion. And his support is equally dumb. It's based on the notion that you can't have social media if you can't read body language, which argues that he really doesn't understand what social media is. Really? And I think that's the crux of it. I think he really doesn't understand that social media does not mean meat space. That it has nothing to do with meat space. It has nothing to do with being able to smell somebody or see them or whatever. It has everything to do with conversation, interaction, to a certain extent, engagement. And I differentiate engagement from interaction because it's a significant difference. But at least interaction. Engagement is the next step up. But at least interaction. So there has to be interaction, it has to be immediacy. And immediacy in both senses of the term. Immediacy meaning some relatively quick period of time to get a response. And the use of language that is inclusive get much better response when we use we and us than we get with me and you. That's part of immediacy. That's part of the construct of immediate language. And fluency. How fluent are you with the use of the tools? How fluent are you with, for example, Twitter? How fluent are you with making blog posts? How fluent are you with posting on Facebook? How fluent are you in Google Plus? Can you navigate the interface is only the beginning. Can you actually connect with people using those tools in any kind of meaningful way, in any kind of way that is either of the meanings of immediate and any form of at least interaction, if not engagement. Now, this writer is arguing that you can't have social if you can't have body language. And what he's basically arguing is that writers can't actually express any kind of meaningful, and I'm going to use this term advisedly, social content without being able to read body language, voice tone, inflection, facial expressions, any of that stuff. Dude, you're a writer. That's what you're supposed to do. That's part of the deal. That's part of how it works. I can understand if people who aren't writers, if people who are sort of social media fans but are not necessarily self-identifying as writers, as authors, as people engaged in the literary arts. I can understand if they have this problem. I can understand that they find it frustrating. I can understand that they don't have the tools, or if they believe they don't have the tools. Frankly, I think people have more tools than they actually give themselves credit for. I've seen it over and over again, but that's sort of a different idea. So there's this idea of you can't have social media unless you're in person. And so social media is, in a certain sense, for this guy, an oxymoron. It's just crazy. The idea of it is, it's kind of dumb. I hesitate to use that word, I really do. But it really demonstrates a complete lack of understanding the nature of social media, of the nature of interaction and engagement, of this idea of immediacy as a function. Monk post. Immediacy as a function of some kind of bigger concept of how we communicate using these tools. I think it goes back to a misconception about the word virtual and his confusion. Good morning. His confusion with the word with the phrase virtual prison and virtual communication. And not understanding that virtual prison means one thing, which he's very, he seems to be very familiar with, a virtual prison. Everybody knows it. Well, it's not really a prison, but it has the characteristics, at least some of the characteristics of a prison. So a virtual prison is not really a prison. It just has some of the characteristics of a prison. And arguing that virtual communication is therefore not real communication, it just has some of the aspects of communication, underscores the fact that those are two different meanings of the word virtual. Those are not the same word. They're spelled the same, they sound the same, they look the same. They're used in the same sorts of constructs. Virtual communication and virtual prison makes you think that you're talking about the same kind of thing, that adjective virtual means the same in both cases, and it doesn't. The problem is that virtual communication means mediated by computer. It's digital communication, probably is a better term, because it's a differentiation between analog, which is what most people think about when they think about normal modes of communication, like radio or voice or a thing like that. That's analog, where you're actually the medium is manipulating the environment in a specific way to create sound waves or to create radio waves or to transmit. In the case of the telephone, before it became digital, in the case of the telephone, the pressure waves of your voice being picked up by a physical diaphragm, and that diaphragm creating a variation in potential, in current, and that differentiation is transmitted via analog lines, where the actual differences are transmitted to a speaker, which is then vibrated using the same pattern. That's an analog communication. That's what the old phones used to do. They haven't done that for, I don't know, 10 years maybe. It's not how phones work anymore. It hasn't been for a long, long time. So in many senses, what we think of as a regular landline telephone is virtual communication, because what you're doing is you're speaking into a computerized handset, which translates your voice not into an analog signal, which is then passed down the line, but into a digital signal, which can be transmitted much more cheaply and much more efficiently and much more accurately over longer distance. So this idea that social media is not real media because it's sort of virtual media, because it's using virtual communications instead of actual people in the room communications, is understandable. But it also really misses the point. Now, one of the interesting things that came out of my research for my dissertation back in 2004, in the last waning days of the 20th century, was this notion of social presence and the efficacy of using alternate modes of communication to transmit, specifically to transmit business messages and to receive business messages. In the 1970s, Short, Williams, and Christie were hired, a team of researchers, were hired by British Telecom to look at ways that things like, they were selling a product at the time, or still trying to sell a product at the time, that was video conferencing over telephone lines. And they were interested in how people perceive those messages. And so Short, Williams, and Christie started a whole series of experiments that examined various modes of communication and how people responded to those modes of communication, how they responded to some basic business constructs, like how accurate was their perception of the message, how readily they would adopt a particular form of communication. And they looked at things like writing. Of course, in 1970 in the UK, this was a you know, the internet was there, but the web sure as hell wasn't. And so most of these people had no email. They had no concept of what email was. So they were looking at business communication in the term of written memos. They were looking at interviews, for employment interviews. How do we gain information about the employee using employment interviews? They were looking at the business meeting, where several people needed to communicate in more or less real time, without travel, because in the 70s, traveling was really quite expensive. It's even more expensive now. It's just more common. So they found some really interesting things. I found them fascinating. The first one was that for an employment interview, the least effective way is to get the person in the room with you. In terms of finding out whether or not they are suited to the job, in terms of their knowledge, skills, and aptitude. Now, when you think about an employment interview, savvy employers do not have an employment interview to determine knowledge, skills, and attitudes. They have an employment interview for chemistry. And from that aspect, yeah, you need them in the room. But the shocking piece was, what they discovered was that if you could see the person, you were less likely to accurately assess their knowledge, skills, and attitudes than if you could only hear them and not see them. In large part because Short, Williams, and Christie hypothesized that the problem is that your logic brain gets overridden by your lizard brain. Things like how you're dressed, how you smell, how you sit, those override all other message forms, and even when they're not appropriate or applicable. So what they did was that they set up a series of interviews with management, and they sent in people, and they kept trading them out. So it was actually a pretty rigorous study. And what they found was that people who would go in and lie about everything, but were dressed well, could get the job. Even though they had no knowledge, everything they said about the job, about